Yeah, it was Ram and Surya.
Next session is on improvements to the impairment requirements in IAS 36. And we have Michael and Michelle here to walk us through the document.
Okay, yes, thank you, and good afternoon, everybody. As you know, last year we completed our post-implementation review on business combinations accounting. And out of that came a couple of projects that the board added to its agenda, one of which is a research project looking at the subsequent accounting for goodwill, looking at the accounting for intangible assets acquired in a business combination, and the third strand of that project is looking at the impairment test in IAS 36. And that's what we want to talk to you about today and some ideas we have related to that. And Michelle will take us through this particular paper and introduce this in a bit more detail.
Okay, this is paper six. As part of our goodwill and impairment project, we're looking at both ways to make the impairment test less burdensome for preparers and also ways to provide better, more timely information to investors without imposing significant costs on preparers. Now, as we only have 30 minutes a day, we'd just like to focus on a disclosure requirement that we're in the early stages of thinking about, but we expect to consult you on other issues at future meetings. So today we'd like to discuss the feasibility of a requirement where preparers would disclose quantitative information about the key performance assumptions and targets supporting the price paid for an acquisition, and so supporting any premium paid above the fair value of the net identifiable assets acquired, and hence supporting the amount of goodwill recognised, and disclosure of a basic comparison of actual performance of the acquisition against those targets. This might be, say, annually for a period of time following the acquisition. Now, we envisage that this disclosure would be driven as much as possible by management's own assessment performed when determining whether to undertake the acquisition, and internal processes for monitoring the performance of the acquisition. So rather than being an additional analysis on top of those. So maybe we could start by seeing what your views are on providing this type of disclosure and how this how the information is currently being reported.
Well, I've got two comments. I'm very much against what you've said for two reasons. The first one, when we pay a price for an acquisition, I think there are a number of factors why we pay a certain price. So just to explain to competitors, for example, how did we come to a certain price on an acquisition? I think it's not completely relevant. In any case, in the purchase price accounting, we have to explain, how we step up assets and liabilities. And at the end of the day, we have also to justify, to explain, what is made, what is the remaining goodwill made of. So basically, in a certain way, we answer to the question, why we paid for such a price? And I do not, I do not see why we do have to provide more information. So that's point number one. Point number two, in practice, it's not possible because an acquisition, you've made an acquisition very quickly. It's integrated in your activities. And very quickly, you do not know, the results, the nature of the results, the growth of the results, what is relating to the original business you had, original activities you had, and what is the actual contribution of the acquisition. We know it maybe for a few months afterwards, but very later after, we do not know, because a lot of events also could have happened, on the economy, on your own activities. So, in theory, maybe it could work interesting, what you say. In practice, I do not see it very, very practical.
Sure. Can I ask, how do you determine then if an acquisition has been as successful as you expected it to be?
I would say we know what we do in our case. As a generally cash generating unit is a country because we are very very geographical in the way we run the business. Basically, we see about the success when we look at impairment test of a goodwill. because basically when you measure, you know, practically we re-measure the overall activity we have in a country, because it's a cash generating unit, and we see whether, you know, we can easily justify the overall goodwill we have in such country. So there is some indication whether the acquisition has been very, you know, successful or not. But again, it's more a global judgment to see, you know, what is really the contribution of that acquisition on the overall results of the cash generating unit.
I think that's a fundamental problem, because when you said first, okay, it is integrated, and say you don't see, okay, what is really the part which is acquired and what was already existing business. But second, on the impairment test, because you measure it on a cash generating unit, which is a combined. I think
so
that is demonstrating the problem
know.
Of that, because you don't measure the original acquisition, you measure something different, and that demonstrates what is the problem. Kevin.
Sorry if I think this is being suspicious, but if the ultimate objective is let's impair goodwill at purchase, then you're going to achieve that objective with this method, because it's going to be simpler for me to write goodwill off day one than to try and track how much of the balance of the asset is what I anticipated and how much is brand new that I didn't anticipate but actually is there to help support the value, because that's where the auditors will take me. So if I'm anticipating cost saving because I can get in with my purchasing power and I fail, but instead I manage to retrench staff, the auditor's going to tell me, no, the retrenched staff wasn't what you planned, so that cash flow doesn't count. You didn't achieve your purchasing power position, so you impair the goodwill. So we all change our process after we've acquired it to try and maximise the value. And what I anticipated 90% of the time doesn't happen, but other things happen that I didn't anticipate that help to balance. And I think, you know, if you've got an integrated operation, it's even worse. At least if I'm buying a separate mine, I can potentially do what you're doing because I've got a separate accounting and everything else. But if I'm buying a refinery above my process, you know, part of my plan might be to market my refineries abilities to other mines in the area. Well, that's going to take some time to get them in place. Right? Did I think I'm going to do it in 3 years? Oh, you didn't. It took four. So impair some goodwill. It's like it's a non-workable model in the real world, and therefore first prize is like write off goodwill day one.
All or some?
All of it. I don't see the difference between if I get a discount on acquisition, I can take it to the income statement. Well, CEO ego is an expense. If I can't allocate the purchase price, I've overpaid. That's no different than negative goodwill.
Is that true?
In my perspective.
Just echoing some of the same comments that have been made, that shortly after the acquisition is completed, you're moving properties in and out of affiliates, restructuring, you might get rid of some. You know, your reasons vary based on the nature of your acquisitions, maybe buying into some areas that you don't have operations where perhaps you could have something like that, but mostly you're in, you know, filling in where you already are operating and getting more continuous types of properties. So I just don't think it would be workable in most situations or operable.
Frank?
Yeah, it's business as usual after it's acquired. Nobody's sitting there thinking, was this a good deal or not? You might do that in certain businesses which are quite isolated, and it's quite a significant acquisition. But in fact, in getting at key drivers, obviously this is real business sensitive stuff. And that starts to give away, in a sense, sometimes your internal metrics on what you're prepared to accept before you acquire. And that can give away then your competitiveness on future acquisitions, because you've now started to tell the market where your metrics are around the acquisition. And so ultimately, you know, if it's a competitive bid process, it's about coming up with the best price to get the acquisition. And if you happen to win it, then all of a sudden you're in the land of disclosing what your targets were. You've given away your hand for future acquisitions.
Well, I'll probably be shot by this group, but what else is new? Stick to your guns. I'll be a little bit flippant. If you go back to number six, based on feedback we received during the PIR and investment outreach, investors appear to be particularly interested in assessing what management thought were the key drivers that justified the purchase price for an acquisition. Ego. Whether an acquisition has been successful, so few are, we probably don't have a population to judge what has been successful. Management stewardship in relation to the acquisition, usually horrific. Being flippant.
You're on record here, Bob.
My advice to you would be to stick to your guns, and you didn't ask the question this way, but is, again, how do you track whether an acquisition was successful? We have billions upon billions of dollars of shareholders' money being spent on acquisitions. And I think the true answer you get from companies is they don't know because they don't track it. And this is almost a big of a deal to me, although not same as the OPEB discussion. I worked for an automotive manufacturer that was giving away the shop and that declared bankruptcy because we were so stupid that we didn't realize we're giving the shop away in post-retirement health care until an accounting change came by. I think the same is true with business combinations. And you'll hear our rhetoric that we can't measure this and that they get integrated and stuff like that. And it's not lying or being distruthful. I think it is that we're not tracking if they're successful. We need to be smarter. And maybe it's time for the standard setters to help us to be smarter. And I don't think, in all due respect, if you're seeing whether one is, if you wait for goodwill impairment, well, come on, give me a break. The ship has already sunk. And so my advice is you're going to get huge brushback. Stick to your guns. This is an important issue. We're talking about billions upon billions of shareholder dollars. Something needs to be done here. I think you're on the right track.
Thanks for that. Shiro?
Yes, I also agree with the proposed solution may be difficult to talk for management in terms of disclose the assumptions. Especially, I assume that here related information is required, I assume, in order to check the goodwill situation. However, if the company discloses such information that will ruin the competitiveness of the company in that market, so in that sense, it is very, very difficult solution the company. So, and if required, the sales-related information like sales revenue or the number of units sold compared with the original plan and actual may be disclosed, but that will be the most maximum information that company may disclose for profit or information.
Okay, thanks, Stefan. Mm-hmm.
Besides some of the things mentioned before, materiality will be an key problem here in this area because, specifically, if you acquire a smaller company, that will be impossible to follow up in detailed level in a company, in a large corporation. And at least I think in the technology sector, what you will find is that most of the acquisitions are actually happening in order to add a complement into the product portfolio, which will be sold as a combination later on. So even tracking sales will be extremely difficult on an individual item. So Then secondly, I think the other challenge will be measuring and making this auditable will be super questionable. I mean, when you talk around key assumptions of or targets supporting the purchase price for an acquisition, I mean, the KPIs are not necessarily metrics which you find like net sales or operating income or something like that. That can be more soft factors, more human competence added to the organization or things like that. I think this will be super difficult to measure and make it audible. And then adding to what was stated, I mean, specifically when it's a small scale acquisition, it's integrated rather quickly. So finding it in the organization will be super difficult. It's certainly different if you have a large acquisition, right? I mean, which everyone also that where the investors are talking around. I mean, you're not talking around these minor investments. Which investors are chasing. It's more the large-scale acquisitions. And those are actually anyway visible and will be reported separately when you communicate your quarterly figures in one way or the other, because it's tracked by the investor community anyway. So I'm not so sure if you really have a big value in adding something there on top.
So when you say that with the larger acquisitions, those are tracked, what's the data typically that is highlighted for investors in those cases?
Well, I mean, you might mention their cost savings, for example, which you anticipate in a way. But then again, this becomes super sophisticated if you really want to track it in detail. When you combine two operations together and to fiddle out what kind of cost saving has now be a result of the of two companies joining force, or what are things which you would have actually executed anyway separately, or at least a small part of that one, that will become, I think, a little bit arbitrary to state this is now a result of the acquisition and another thing is a result of what you would have done as a going concern from your operation. I mean, some synergy, if you, for example, have a synergy play where you from the beginning state, this acquisition is around gaining market shares or getting scale, this is usually more kind of cost play, right, where you would get some synergies or expect some synergies. But that you would also like to see later on happening in reality. And that is that you will see in the P&L being reported. When it has a certain size of business.
Okay, Malcolm?
Yeah, I have to say I've got a little bit of sympathy for your point 7B. I think 7A, I don't think at the time of making an acquisition we should be forced to explain the assumptions and why we paid the price. But I have to say 7B that we from over a certain threshold perhaps we should give some sort of indication as to whether or not it's met our internal targets. Now what Stefan was saying, I fully agree. I think you shouldn't assume, first of all, acquisitions many times could be the revenue of the target, but you have to think about why you're making the acquisition. It might be that you actually, because you've got that acquisition, you can cut not only the cost base of what you've acquired, but your own cost base. So it's not always the acquisition itself, but it's your own activity that is somehow strengthened. It could be that you're complementing technology, a certain niche in technology, which. The other thing, though, you have to also understand, I mean, this whole discussion here that you are linking it with impairment. Now, I think you have to understand you can actually sometimes, depending on the headroom that you have in the cash-generating unit, which is making the acquisition, you might actually, in the worst case, have a pretty lousy acquisition, but still not have an impairment because it's the goodwill of the whole. With the current model that we have, we're no longer forced to keep tracking the goodwill of related to that given acquisition. So I don't know what you would do with this information. That's the other thing. You shouldn't automatically assume that just because you're told that the the acquisition is not performing as was presented to the board, you know, at the time of making the acquisition, that you automatically have an impairment. Having said that, I think there is a bit of a stewardship thing. We're spending money with, you know, should the money have gone for that acquisition compared to going to the shareholders? So I've got Bob as being a little bit, pulling our legs a little bit, but there is, I think, something that we should give in our sort of stewardship function. We are in the end spending cash that could have been used for other purposes. So I think we do have an obligation to provide some sort of update, whether or not it was meeting the targets. But you shouldn't automatically assume that if it's not meeting targets, you've got an impairment. That's not with our current model anyway.
Christoph?
The way the question is asked sounds a bit as if there's the assumption that I make an acquisition to make the acquisition successful. Oftentimes an acquisition is only one measure in a bigger chunk of measures. To give you an example, we got a software product which we think we want to significantly increase the revenue for. Now we look at it and we say, what do we do? Number one, we identify two functional gaps. We decide to close one by organic development and close the second of the gaps by making an acquisition. We decide to add a significant number of sales and pre-sales people and spend more on marketing. In the end, we may be able to measure whether the product has seen a significant growth in revenue. But I couldn't say how much of that growth of revenue is now because of that one functional gap that I filled with making the acquisition. So we don't even think in the terms that there needs to be an individual specific return on the investment in this acquisition because it is part of a much bigger investment case. The whole thing sounds to me a bit of, if we're going forward, would say, could you please report on whether you got a positive return on your board members because you're paying them a lot of money in compensation, and could you say whether they bring an appropriate return? You couldn't.
Easy question.
This is a public meeting, but
oftentimes it is simply a part of a much bigger pie, and there is no individual tracking. On top of that, we've done a number of acquisitions where even the KPIs that we initially use to think about what would be a right price for the acquisitions and the KPIs that we use later after having acquired integrated, KPIs may change completely. And then I don't track the KPIs they used before. I think one feature that may help is if you think about what is management using, and if management doesn't make a review on the level of the individual acquisitions or post-review in a way of was it successful or not. If management doesn't have a look into that, it's either because it is not possible to do it, but to then say it may be interesting for externals if management is not interested, I don't know whether that would be frequently the case.
Thanks, Christoph. Philippe?
Yeah, I wanted to react to something that Malcolm said. Maybe I got it wrong, but you look at balance sheets of companies, goodwills are huge amounts, sometimes 100% of the net book value of the company, most of the time 50% or more of the net book value. And it's been accumulated over 20, 30 years and it's not been amortized, maybe not been written off, still there, over 20 years. So if I look at the current year financial statements, I can see the acquisitions for the current period, maybe for the prior period, and that's it. And I have to dig out 20 years of financial statements to find out what is underlying this amount of goodwill. Is there something we could do or could be done to just make it easier for investors at least to know what was behind, what is behind this huge amount, maybe by having a history of that amount of goodwill without having to go back to 20 years?
Is that a question to me? I mean,
because it seems to me that it's quite difficult to find. I know you don't do it with fixed assets.
I mean, one
fixed assets, but they have a useful life. They disappear over time. They are being amortized, are being replaced. Whereas goodwill, by definition, is not amortized, so it stays forever. and it can be very old. I mean, it can
I suppose in theory you could, I don't think I'm saying anything too stupid for this, you could give some indication to say, okay, this of this goodwill, this amount came from this acquisition, this amount from this acquisition, and, you know, actually give a little bit of the build-up for the material amounts included in the goodwill. But I have to say, I have a concern, and I haven't really thought this through to the end. I mean,
the moment you have an impairment charge on a cash-generating unit that has goodwill for multiple acquisitions,
then you've lost it. Then exactly, you've lost it. So you're right. That would be the downside. If you've got an impairment, you don't know how to allocate that impairment.
And I think what we learned from this discussion, I think the number isolated does not make so many sense. It makes sense in the relation of the integrated cash-generating unit, but to bring an isolated value to this number or meaning is very, very difficult. Wow. And that is one of the underlying problems.
Could be allocated by segments.
Maybe, yeah. Peter?
I've got a question for Bob. So you were suggesting that we should stick to our guns, and I think most other people think there are significant problems with the acquisitions that are integrated very quickly. Do you have any ideas on, and I assume those are real practical problems, do you have any ideas on how we might go about overcoming them?
I would advise keep asking questions, and be comfortable with yourself, with the overall thought process when you go to management and you ask them, how do you track whether an acquisition is successful? Either they'd say, we can't do it, which would be troublesome to me as a shareholder. I perceive that companies aren't very good at it. I think they should get better, and they can help you. But just ask that question and see if it makes good sense to you. You may not have the right answers in here of what to disclose, but I would remind, on larger acquisitions, there's a due diligence report to the board of directors, which goes into infinite detail of why they should agree to an acquisition. Now, there will be sensitivity about disclosing some of that information, but again, you're talking about billions and billions of dollars of shareholders' money. Just go there with an open mind and ask companies, how do they track whether an acquisition is successful? Either they'll tell you, we don't, which is troublesome to me as a shareholder, or they'll tell you something. I'm not sure what they'll tell you. But that's what you need to do. And I'd keep pushing and pushing and pushing. This is too big of a dollar amount of shareholders' money being spent without more disclosure in this area.
But to Bob's point... Why the focus on this? Why not the focus on remuneration for staff? I mean, all we have is one number that goes in the P&L for salary expenses paid for the year, but we don't have an analysis to say, is that well-spent money for the shareholders? It's a very significant number in the context of financial institutions and so on, but we don't analyze whether the stewardship of that amount is appropriate or not.
I would just, right, my only concern, I could be wrong, is, and who knows if you trust academic studies, and maybe this is where you can start, and maybe you start, but I think academic studies have shown us that at least the majority of business acquisitions are value destructive. I think that's what academic studies have shown us over the years. So that should be troublesome to the capital markets and to management. True or not true, it's something to start with. I don't disagree with your point about paying people, but I think there's academic research that, and general thought process, that quite possibly acquisitions net have been destructive at a very gross level to shareholder value for individual companies. So that's an issue, and you have the responsibility to take a hard look at that and get straight answers.
Kevin?
I support most of what Bob was saying, and I think the only solution is that we'd have to do annual purchase price allocations in order to reconfirm our initial facts. If I think about an acquisition we did when gold was at 1800, that was designed to achieve 6 million ounces of gold in our dumps, which was ex waste that we could reprocess because they had the facility to do it. But then gold fell. And instead of 6 million ounces, I can only get 4.5. But in the same period of time, the underlying cost structures collapsed. Oil's collapsed, all of my reagents have collapsed, and so forth. And so my inherent gross margin has actually improved. But I didn't buy it for the inherent gross margin. I bought it to process 6 million ounces. So I'm only going to process 4 if I've got a goodwill impairment. I don't think so, because my return to shareholders is still positive. It's more than just one thing.
Exactly, yeah. Any other comments? Michelle, you are happy with her?
Yeah.
Okay, so thank you very much.
I'll send you my resume.
Okay, then let's move to the last session of the day, which is rate